The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
We're breaking from our weekly podcast to bring you highlights from WSJ Tech's DLive conference in Laguna Beach, California.
The future of everything. A look ahead from the Wall Street Journal with Jennifer Strong.
The global race for driverless cars is just getting started, but autonomous vehicles already face roadblocks. John Krafcik is the chief executive of Alphabet's autonomous car company, Waymo. He's joined on stage by Wall Street Journal business editor, Jamie Heller.
About a year ago, right on this stage, Dan Amen was here from GM, and the excitement about autonomous cars was palpable. Who's going to be first? Who's going to be best? Who's going to commercialize it in the race to autonomous cars? And then it was a kind of a sobering year where we had a tragic accident, and GM had planned to roll out in Manhattan. That still hasn't happened. Overall, for autonomous cars, has this been a year of progress or step backs overall?
I think it's a great question. If this is a race, it'd be cliche to say this is a marathon, because it's honestly more than a marathon. It's like one of those 100-milers where it's going to take a long time. We've been at it at Waymo now for nearly 10 years. Next year will be our 10-year anniversary. It took us those first 7 years to get to what we did in October 2015, which was put the world's first fully driverless car on the road without controls, and we were confident enough in the safety of that technology to move a friend of our project, Steve Mann, who was blind, through the streets of Austin on a 10-minute ride. It was a pretty amazing moment. That was 3 years ago. It took us another couple of years to iterate on the hardware and get to the next generation of our self-driving technology and move a small fleet of vehicles on the roads of Phoenix at the same time. So that was 2017, about a year ago. And then it's taken us another year to get to the point where we are right now, where we can put, say, 100 cars, 100 hailable cars in fully driverless mode on the streets at the same time. So I think the message for everyone watching this space and for all of us is it's really, really hard. You don't know what you don't know until you're actually in there and trying to do things. And we've just learned so much over these past 3 years as we're moving into this scaling part of our business, compared to those first 7 years where it was just truly the moonshot. I mean, when you think about a moonshot, it's doing one thing. It's N equals one. And that's what that first driverless car ride is. Now we're trying to scale that and do it reliably using lean production principles for hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, millions of rides a day. This is where it gets really interesting and really hard.
Like, how soon will it be able to be anyone in this Phoenix area that wants to just use their app and call you guys and pay for a car?
Yeah, it's a great question. So at the same time right now, driverless cars are here. They're truly here. People are using them. Humans are using them. I was in one on Monday in Phoenix. At the same time, they're not ubiquitous. And it's going to be a really long time, I think decades, before you see this technology everywhere in the world. We talk a lot in this industry about the difference between L4 and L5 technology. There's some discussions about L2 and L3. These are industry terms for the varying levels of driving automation that are available.
L5 being the total automation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. L5 is...
That's really like Jetsons.
It's sort of like Jetsons. Yeah. It can drive anywhere at any time in any weather. I like to joke that I'm not L5, so it would be amazing if we could get technology to be L5. And I think that's going too far. I'm not sure that we're ever, and by we I mean the entire industry, is ever going to achieve an L5 level of automation, which when you think about it means the car could drive from San Francisco to Santiago, Chile, any time of year, in any kind of weather. You know, I think it's sort of silly that we think about it. And it's important, I think, for all of us to be really clear on the language around self-driving, because it does end up confusing people. I'm going to get to your Phoenix question in a minute, but I want to make this point. There are really only two flavors of this technology. Either the human in the car needs to pay attention, that's driver assist, or the human in the car doesn't need to pay attention, and that's autonomy. And that autonomy, I think, is always going to have some constraint on it, some geographical constraint or some climate-driven constraint. I think that's the reality. And if we would just speak about these technologies, just using those two terms, driver assist or full autonomy, It's one or the other. I think the world will be a lot safer because right now, a lot of people, I think about half of Americans based on a recent study, believe that you can buy a fully driverless car right now. Of course, you can't buy a fully driverless car right now, and it's going to be years before you can buy a fully driverless car.
But it might be weeks before you can hail one.
Thanks for taking me back to this point.
Right?
Yeah, this is true. So what Jamie's speaking to is we've been running since early last year something called the Early Rider Program in Phoenix. So we announced this project in Phoenix. We went there and we told the good Phoenicians, people who live in Phoenix, that they'd have the opportunity to help craft the self-driving future. And would you be interested in some rides in Waymo self-driving vehicles? We had 20,000 hand raisers in a week, which was amazing. We selected 100 or so of them to start. We've got 400 of these so-called early riders now. And they've been wonderful pilot participants for us in helping us understand and craft all the subtleties that are required to make a self-driving service that really works for the people of Phoenix. So right now, only these people have had access to the technology. They use an app. They're able to use this service to take them anywhere in our service area, which is the largest aspect of it right now is about 100 square miles. But most of our riders are in a smaller portion of that service area. And with that app, they can move from point A to point B anywhere at any time, 24/7. And what Jamie's talking about is now we're at the point where we're going to expand this step by step, little by little, because, again, I want to come back to this point. This is a very long journey. It's a very challenging technology, and we're going to take our time. Truly, every step matters. So over the course of the next couple of months, we're going to be opening it up to more folks and giving our early riders a little bit more autonomy in what they can do, and so they can share their experiences with the world.
And they can pay for it, too.
Yeah, and we have been experimenting with pricing models. So, you know, this product that we have is really interesting, and I don't think a lot of folks have thought deeply about why it's different. One of the reasons it's different is our driver is exactly the same. Our driver drives exactly the same.
You use this term driver, which is AKA the technology.
AKA the technology, okay. Yeah. Really, when you think about Waymo, we're not a car company. We're a technology company, and our goal is to build the world's most experienced driver. That's our product. We want to drive, and we hope to drive anything, anytime, anywhere on the planet. And this could be in many different form factors, right? It could be a car, it could be a truck, it could be a small sidewalk delivery vehicle. There are all sorts of products that we could imagine driving.
Let's go to the trucks. Can we get a photo of the truck? Because this is a lot's been talked about your Phoenix pilot, yeah. But you've actually got a pilot in Atlanta with these.
This is Big Blue.
Big Blue.
This is Big Blue. This is a Peterbilt. Yeah, to the point. So we're developing the world's most experienced driver. And if you look closely over the cab of that truck, you can see our characteristic dome. In a way, this is a branding signature for Waymo, but it's also an indication of the priority we place on safety. So in that dome are two LIDARs and 19 cameras. And that helps this truck see the world very, very well. So we've had a pilot that we had in place in Atlanta earlier this year where we're moving goods from point A to point B for our sister company, Google. And we've learned a lot in this pilot. We're now growing our fleet of trucks, and we hope to bring these to bear to help solve some of the problems that the logistics industry is going through right now. If any of you are in logistics, you know how hard it is to find drivers. It's a huge problem, and I think the reason for that is long-distance truck driving has to be one of the worst jobs in the world. I mean, it's a horrible job. It's difficult to maintain family relationships or a good diet. If you've ever eaten truck stop food, you know what I'm talking about. This is a great example, I think, of Waymo technology being applied in a way that can be super helpful.
And what are we talking about on this one? Is this one 5 years, 10 years? Like, I mean, this trucking shortage is now.
Trucking shortage is now. Jamie, to your point, yeah, there's about 50,000. We're about 50,000 truck drivers short of what we need to do a good job in logistics. That's projected to grow to about 275,000 over the course of the next couple of years. And the use case here is fairly straightforward. Moving goods on freeways from hub to hub is a fairly straightforward application of our technology. It is much easier than the initial problem that we're trying to solve using Waymo technology in a ride-sharing service. So this is something you could anticipate a material contribution to the world from Waymo over the course of the next couple of years.
Is that like a potential like solution to Amazon or a competitor to Amazon? Like in a lot of these, in this world, there's a lot of competitors and partners sort of same time.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, if you think about Waymo as a driver, we're just a driver. I don't think there are a lot of companies out there that would feel that we're a competitor. We're more an enabler. It's always been our stance in this industry. We don't like the word disruption. At Waymo, we're not talking about disrupting anyone or anything. We're just trying to move things from point A to point B. That's enabling us to partner with a lot of different companies. Folks have thought of car companies as competitors to Waymo. It's not the case. Our technology enables car companies, right?
I want to stay on this thing with partnerships, because with Walmart is one of your partners, right?
Yeah.
And they are paying you guys to shuttle people in this Phoenix area to their store, which is basically a sign that this isn't just like a glimmer in the eye of technologists, but like something that can actually help bread and butter businesses.
That's right.
Hey, you help someone get into our store, they're probably going to buy more stuff than they would online. Right?
It's been a remarkable thing that we've learned over the course of the last 18 months is, you know, we had gone in with a hypothesis that this is a B2C play like traditional ride sharing, but where we've seen a lot of interest, and it's super exciting for us, is the B2B aspect. So there's a lot of economic value in that for businesses that want these people to go to their bricks and mortar locations. It's really interesting. It's something that we hadn't anticipated or thought about early in the process, but we have this insight now.
It seems like legitimizing that there's a demand, not just
an
idea.
Yeah, and this is a whole other channel of demand that we really hadn't thought deeply about that could end up being a really significant part of the business going forward.
And so there's the ride sharing, there's the trucks.
That's right.
Assisting transportation systems, public transportation.
Yeah, so getting back to this enabling aspect of the technology, we have a lot of public transportation infrastructure in the U.S., but it's probably fair to say it's underutilized. And one of the reasons is it's hard sometimes for people to get to those public transportation hubs. Self-driving technology is a great way to do that. And so we have partnerships already in place in Phoenix. We're removing folks from their places of work or where they live to existing public transportation infrastructure in Phoenix through Valley Metro, which is the local Phoenix.
Questions.
How are you handling the insurance and liability coverages and injuries in the vehicle, all that sort of yummy stuff that we all deal with in insurance?
It's delicious, yeah. So first I want to bore you with some statistics on the cost of driving right now in the U.S. So we Americans drive about 3 trillion miles a year. And the social loss associated with that driving is, rough numbers, about $1 trillion if you look at the total cumulative cost annually of injuries, fatalities, lost work time, all of that's about $1 trillion. That's a remarkable 30 cents a mile or so. And if insurance is effective and you assume that same sort of loss rate going forward, you'd need to reserve about 30 cents per mile just associated with insurance costs to cover that. So it's a huge component of cost in our daily transportation world right now. And it's a big part of our thinking going forward. So we do have some thoughts around it. And we do believe, based on our experience so far, that we're going to have a lower, of course, claim rate. And that's going to be one of the social and economic benefits that comes through the application of the technology.
Right here.
Thank you. Now, most of the uses will be great, but there's going to be some edge cases. How can we prevent autonomous truck bombs or autonomous car bombs? Because there's going to be some bad guys out there using some pretty great technology in the wrong hands. How can we prevent that?
Technology gets abused.
Right? Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think we need to be super thoughtful about it. One of the things to keep in mind about the vehicle, so I mentioned our dome, has 19 cameras, you know, on top of the car. For the folks who wanted to do something like that, they're going to have to think deeply about the fact that, well, we sort of know as you're getting into the vehicle, you know, your profile. So I think that we would have mitigations that could help us in situations like that. But I agree, this, like many other things, we have to be super thoughtful about very early in our planning.
Right here.
This one
up front. Go ahead.
How do you think about, in the case of accidents that are about to happen where, you know, some people are going to get injured, how do you think about who gets injured if there's a dilemma, a moral dilemma?
Yeah, it's a great question. We call this the trolley problem. And what we do here is, so let me say a couple of things. First is that context is somewhat of an artificial context because it imagines that you're faced with a situation where you must make such a decision. And the reality and the benefit of our technology is we can see so far with the sensing that we have. We can see up to 300 meters. So typically, we won't get in situations like that because we're going to have so much foresight. You know, we can see the nun and the rabbi both at the same time, far, far away, and stop well before we get to either of them. This is super helpful. But, you know, we do certainly have a different way of prioritizing the other road users that we see. And we do give priority to small children. Our technology is able to understand the difference between a small child who might act erratically, a pedestrian, and then a cyclist, and then a motorcyclist, then a car and a truck. So we are able to, of course, categorize these things and treat them individually from that standpoint.
So Morgan Stanley has been duly impressed, and as the analysts are giving your company a $175 billion speculative valuation. You guys are not part of Google. Your staff are just like any venture employees. How much pressure are they putting on you to make that accessible to them? It's an IPO in the near future.
So what Jamie mentions is one of the wonderful things about Alphabet and the bet. So Waymo is one of the other bets within the Alphabet structure, is we're incentivized very, very differently. I've never had Google equity since I joined Waymo 3 years ago. We have our own equity structure. And I think it's a wonderful thing for us because it gives us the opportunity to live within this Alphabet corporate structure, which is great. We have patient investors in the company, and it allows us to focus on just getting the job done and getting the technology out. So we did feel an awful lot of that pressure. I think if you could see, we call ourselves Waymonauts. If you were to talk to a typical Waymonaut, I think what you'd hear from that Waymonaut is their focus on our mission, which is to design technology that helps people move safely around the world, that helps makes a dent in the 1.25 million people who die every year in car crashes. It's terrible. It's like a 737 crashing every hour of every day. That's how many people die in the world's roads. And it's amazing for all of this time that we have been willing and to accept that as a social loss. So,
but it's nice to be paid for your good work. So
it is indeed.
Yeah. But with that valuation, you guys are on the upswing in Wall Street's eyes, Tesla, not so much. Do you see yourself as a potential acquirer in the years ahead?
Oh, gee. Tesla's a great company. They've done something so amazing for the world. So the development and deployment of an EV skateboard architecture, it's an amazing thing. And we love that at Waymo. We're not a car company, so we're not interested in becoming a car company. But that technology we love, and we love the idea of driving all sorts of 100% zero emission electric vehicles that have a full battery and floor pan sort of architecture. So we're grateful to Tesla for setting that blueprint for the industry.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Jamie.
Waymo's John Krafcik and Wall Street Journal business editor Jamie Heller. The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. This episode was produced by Anthony Green and Emma Silikens. Our technical director is Jacob Gorski. John Wardock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcasts. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. Thanks to our editors on the live journalism team, Yoon-Hee Kim, Nikki Waller, and Kim Last. And special thanks to festival organizers Anna Raftal, Andrea Acosta, and Robin Wood-Saylor. Be sure to check back for regular episodes in the weeks ahead, including special reporting on the Earth's changing climate. And remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong in Laguna Beach, California.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.